Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-yo, 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 hey-yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey-yo, 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 hey-yo. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey-yo, 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 hey-yo. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Chunhoane Gunyadalawanyane Godinyagele Chunhoane
music from Haudenosaunee Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah from her Silver Waves CD entitled Sky Woman. That particular song was entitled Whales of the Sea. And I want to share with our worldwide listening audience Joanne Shenandoah's liner notes about this song. Quote, Whales of the Sea. A young man went on a great journey to the eastern sea. He brought back to the Iroquois a great whale. As guardians of the seas, we have seen how whales have suffered the imbalances of the earth caused by humans. It has been foretold in our prophecies the sun would become dark after humans take from the moon. Life on earth would then experience great changes. As we listen to the cries of the whales, it reminds us that those changes are coming to pass. We know the fate which befalls the whales shall be the destiny of human beings, unquote. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. We now continue in program two of my conversation with Earth justice activist and personal friend, Joy Ezell. Hey, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we are honored to share a conversation with environmental community and peace activist Joy Ezell. Joy shares Yat-Kitishi Native Center's concern for protecting Mother Earth and promoting environmental social justice. Joy Ezell's activism exemplifies the important ethic of thinking globally and acting locally. Some of the issues she is fighting with her community organization include environmental, economic, and social impacts of the multinational corporation PG&E Buckeye Paper Mill, a proposed 800-megawatt coal-fired power plant, and United States military plans to locate a cruise missile bombing range in her area. These and other issues are topics of today's conversation when Joy visited us here at Yat-Kitishi Native Center. Yat-Kitishi Native Center's concern for protecting Mother Earth and the well-being of all life, in keeping with the indigenous ethic of caring for future generations, is why we are honored to be part of the worldwide environmental justice anti-globalization movement. Most every Wolf Mountain Radio program focuses on some aspect of defending our biosphere, as well as promoting sovereignty and self-determination of traditional cultures around the world. I personally have had the honor, over the past 35 years, to see firsthand and fight against many cases of environmental and social injustices in different parts of the globe. In my travels, I have met many fine and courageous people who are working to create a better world. Each Earth warrior I've met renews my energy to continue to defend Mother Earth. Joy Ezell is one such friend. Joy Ezell and I share a similar background and experiences as Earth justice activists. We both grew up in rural areas where agriculture and forestry dominate the political and economic society. Like feudal kingdoms, agribusiness and forest industries rule the region. Anyone who questions those dragons does so under great threat. As a forest ecologist who has spent much of my life fighting forest industries around the world who destroy and pollute traditional cultures and ecosystems, Joy Ezell's battle against the Buckeye Pulp and Paper Mill is particularly special to me. This company is responsible for serious environmental health impacts from their poisonous discharge effluents that contaminate the region's creeks and rivers and poison underground aquifer needed for drinking water. The mill also is the engine that drives the excessive and unsustainable cutting down of forests, raping the land. Historically, the landscape of the region now called North Florida, where Joy lives, was a beautiful ecosystem with a rich diversity of plant and animal species. Variations in topography, soil types, and hydrology created a unique watershed. It was first home to ancient culture peoples, such as the Apalaches, Tallahassees, Timucuas, and other tribal nations who lived in peace with nature. The arrival of Spanish explorers to the so-called New World did have an impact on the land, but the forest and wet prairie creek environment was still able to survive. Southeast Indians, who are now known as Florida Seminoles and Yuchi Creeks, for generations lived in harmony with this land. Early white settlers, like Joy Ezell's family, found the region a near paradise. Large cypress trees and longleaf pine, hardwood hammocks, marshes, creeks, and freshwater springs allowed rural communities to flourish. Coastal areas had the bounty of the Gulf of Mexico. Now this once beautiful area, like so many places around the world, is under assault. This biologically fragile area is quickly being destroyed. The unique old-growth forests have been cut down to feed the ever-demanding pulp and paper industry's greed for timber. PG&E's Buckeye Mill is like a giant vacuum cleaner sucking up the forests. It leaves a scared landscape. So-called reforestation is nothing more than agro-industrial plantations, monoculture tree farms, which depend upon heavy inputs of chemical fertilizers, herbicides, and insecticides, now predominantly the landscape. Wiped out are the unique species of fauna and flora that once supported a diverse variety of wildlife. Hazardous waste, such as highly toxic dioxins, which are carcinogenic and mutagenic poisons, spew out from the Buckeye paper plant. These poisons greatly impact animal, plant, and human health. I first met Joy Ezell at a conference focusing on dioxin more than a decade ago. The conference, sponsored by the great citizen activist organization, Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, documented testimony from many grassroots groups that were and continue to battle corporate polluters. This great environmental justice organization, Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, under the leadership of our friend Lois Gibbs, still helps communities around the nation fight toxic waste sites. Lois, by the way, organized the Love Canal campaign against the infamous Hooker Chemical Company that contaminated her neighborhood in the 1970s. Not too long ago, I had the privilege to be a speaker with Lois Gibbs again at the 25th anniversary Legal Environmental Action Foundation Environmental Justice Conference in Tallahassee, Florida. On my way there, I had the opportunity to again visit the Buckeye plant to witness the paper mill's pollution. The situation that I have briefly described exemplifies many places throughout the world which are under attack by multinational corporations and government land use plans. While my conversation with Joy Ezell focuses on the region now called North Florida, the issues facing her community could be nearly anywhere in the world. Florida, in many ways, is like a so-called third world country. Much of the state is run by a government corporate elite partnership. Forest industries, such as in Joy's Taylor County, phosphate mining in central Florida, or agribusinesses such as sugarcane, citrus, vegetables, and even cattle ranching in the region where I live, not to mention unsustainable urbanization, are greatly impacting the environment and human societies. It is also important to remember that Florida is still Dixieland, the Deep South. While there has been some cosmetic change in relations between the races, socioeconomic differences and perhaps more subtle segregation still exists, especially in the region where Joy Ezell is from. This makes her activism very special and very important. Yad Kiddushin Native Center is privileged to have Joy Ezell on our program today. Welcome, Joy Ezell. In our conversation, I would like for you to share a little bit of personal background about your experience growing up in rural America, rural Florida. You have a very interesting business card underneath your name, says environmental activist, the organization HOPE, Help Our Polluted Environment. But I know you also share a lot of common concerns and experiences and even education about rural community development and agriculture, as I did. Would you please share some of your background in agriculture and rural community development, how you worked for chemical companies as a pesticide sales person after college, and that was really the catalyst that got you thinking and got you to become an environmental activist?
Grew up in Perry, Florida, up in Taylor County, up in North Florida. Grew up on a farm, went off to school and studied agricultural business, and went to work for a chemical company and sold some of the worst agricultural chemicals that there were known to man, some FMC Ag Chemicals. This is the company that I worked for first. So I got to learn a whole lot about different kinds of chemicals and what they did, and I was afraid that I was ruining the environment. And this was way back in the 70s now, so it was a long time ago. I got really worried about what I was doing about the environment, and I thought that I was doing the wrong thing. So I went back to school and got my master's, and unfortunately I went to work for another chemical company and sold even worse chemicals than I did to start off with. But it taught me a whole lot, because when I moved back home in 1981, first thing my grandmother told me was that the water was polluted at home in Taylor County. And I said, "What are you talking about, Mama?" And she said, "Well, Buckeye's in the water. You know, you can't drink the water down here anymore because it's got Buckeye." And what she meant was the paper mill effluent was in the water, that they had contaminated the aquifer. And so, consequently, our well water was contaminated. I couldn't believe that nobody was, you know, raising all kinds of holy hell about it, but nobody was saying a word. It was very, very a quiet thing, and only really a very few people actually knew about it. So I started asking questions, and I found out that some of those chemicals that were in our water were very similar to some of the chemicals that I had been selling for all those years. My son was about 12 years old at that time, and his name was Trey. And every day when I took him to school or took him back home from school, we had to cross the Finn Holloway River, and that's the river that's so polluted from the mill. And he would look at me and he would say, "Mama, why don't you make them clean up that river? It's so nasty, it's so black, and it's so ugly, it's so polluted." And, you know, kids think you can do everything in the world, and I just kind of passed it off for a while there, and I said, "Yeah, sure, Trey, you know, I'll get to that. That'll be my next project." He kept on at me until I really did get interested in it. So I started asking questions. I made a trip to Taylor, back then to the DER, and of course they didn't want to talk to me. And I made a trip up to Atlanta to the EPA, and they pretty much wanted to just brush me aside and get me out of there. But the more I learned, the more upset I became, and the more convinced I was that we had a really, really bad problem in Taylor County with the river. So that's what got me started on all my environmental work. I found out that I remember the day in 1986 that I found out that the dioxin that was being set out from the mill in the effluent was exactly the same chemical as Agent Orange. And that was a very depressing day for me, because back then there was hardly anybody for me to talk to at home about that kind of thing. You know, nobody wanted to talk to me about it. It was a taboo subject in Taylor County. You just didn't criticize the mill because that was where everybody worked. The main source of income for people there, the only big employer in the county. And you just didn't really want to criticize them very much, or you'd be blacklisted. And when I finally did sort of come out of the closet about it and become vocal about it, the local paper called me an armed radical environmental terrorist. And when they called me that, I knew I was doing the right thing. I knew I was making points and doing what I should be doing. I was on the right track. I met Onis years ago. We've been to several environmental meetings together. We were at the dioxin meeting in Tallahassee years ago together. We were both at the Cassini demonstration back in 89. We've been to several different kinds of environmental and peace meetings through the years, and I'm so pleased to be with y'all today.
Would also like to inform our worldwide listening audience that this is a case of environmental racism. When I use the term racism, I don't just mean against the human beings, which is tragic as it is, but also that it affects Mother Earth, the animals and plants, the fish and marine life, and the forest. And while we are talking this evening, our conversation largely about pulp and paper pollution and the impacts of the mill, both economically and socially in a community, we're not even yet mentioning the biological impact of real devastation to what once was a very diverse, beautiful southeast forest ecosystem. And when any of these forest industries, pulp and paper companies, officials talk about renewable natural resources and silviculture and forestry, I don't want our listeners to be misled or fooled. This is not reforestation, or it is by no means good stewardship. What we're really talking about is the rape of Mother Earth, and these are really tree farms, and that the trees that they plant to keep these mills going are very much heavily dependent upon agricultural chemical inputs in terms of fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides, and even water, underground aquifer water. Would you comment a little bit, as someone who is a fifth-generation Floridian, you mentioned your husband is also a fifth-generation Floridian, you and your family are in many ways are like us Native American people. You have a tie to the land. This is a very cultural, spiritual place of home. It's not just a vacation land for you. This is where your family is rooted. Would you talk a little bit about your personal connection to that place, because really I think it's very important for listeners to think about developing a connection to the land, and also if you would talk a little bit about the biological consequences of this so-called land use or land management.
Let me first say that a managed forest is not a forest. That is just not true. The way they're growing pine trees now for pulp and paper mills is just ridiculous. They get rid of all the cypress. They get rid of all the hardwood. They plant and they replant and they replant. My grandfather was a very smart old guy, and he told me that once up there where we live, that if they plant pine trees three times in a row, they will be totally depleted the soil of any kind of nutrients, and they won't get anything else to grow. And that is absolutely what's happening. Now they're having to use chemical fertilizers to get those little hybrid trees to grow, and those little hybrid trees don't even have pine cones. They don't produce pine cones. So they're not real trees. They're genetically formed organisms that are not real natural trees. And it just, it's amazing how many people go up to North Florida and they see all those planted pine trees and they think, well, how wonderful. This is just beautiful here because of all these gorgeous trees. And they have no idea that it's not a forest. It's a tree farm.
There's no nature left.
There's nothing on those new pine trees now, those hybrid trees, for any kind of an animal to live on. If it doesn't even make pine cones, the little squirrels can't get the pine nuts because there's no pine cones. The straw falls off of them and people rake the straw and bale it and sell it for pine straw. And I don't think that's all that harmful to the soil. It's probably over a long time it might not be helpful. But the fact is that the very way that they clear-cut trees now and then plant them right back is very, very harmful to the soil and to the environment. They say when they do this riparian thing that they leave trees 30 feet on each side of the streams. Well, when it was for miles on each side of the stream, and you only leave 30 feet when you clear cut it, you're not doing much to help that stream. I was born in 1947. The mill polluted the river in 1954. So I well remember how the Finn Holloway looked before it was polluted. It was crystal clear. During times of the year, it would be dark water because it was what they call up there a tannin affected river, organic matter from the San Pedro Bay, which is an inland bay. It's like the water recharge area for North Florida. It's kind of like an inland bowl, and it's on the north and east side of Taylor County, about 20 miles, 25 miles from the coast. So it's an inland bay, but it was the water recharge area for all of North Florida. In the 50s and 60s, the Army Corps of Engineers came in and helped Buckeye cut canals and drain that bay so that they could plant more pine trees, of course. And they've never really been successful in planting a lot of pine trees in there because it is a bay and it fills up with water every time we have a lot of rainfall. It basically has affected all of the rivers and the streams in the county because the San Pedro Bay is the headwaters to all of the rivers and streams in Taylor County. But I remember when the Finn Holloway was very crystal clear and very beautiful. The boys would dive for pennies. People were fishing in it, and I remember well when it was polluted. The mill said that they had an accidental spill of 500,000 gallons of black liquor, some of the worst liquor that comes out of the effluent that comes out of the mill during the cooking process, and it went into the river, and I remember going over the bridge and there were millions of dead fish. My grandfather was very upset. He was always against them polluting the river. When I was a little child, I remember him fussing about it. I have Indian blood in me also. My great-great-grandfather married an Indian woman. My husband's family also has Indian blood. His great-great-grandfather also married an Indian woman. So we have Native American blood in us, too. And even if we didn't, we would feel a very close connection with the earth and the environment in Florida because we were born and raised here, and we have seen it go through a lot of changes. We've seen a lot of development that we think is a bad idea. We've seen all this destruction from the pulp and paper mills. The coal-fired power plants cause a lot of pollution. All of the big polluters just breaks your heart when you love the environment and you love good, clean nature and you want to have people be healthy and you want the environment to be healthy. None of us want to see fish be polluted and contaminated. I mean, that's just the wrong thing to do. You think about the wildlife. The wildlife is really suffering from this, the way that they're planting pine trees now. And every time they go in and they clear cut, they cut a little bit more into the hardwood. They cut some more of the cypress. Until eventually we're going to get to the point that we have no more cypress trees. And cypress trees take hundreds of years to grow. Hardwood will try to regenerate itself in about 40 to 45 years. But it won't be the same quality hardwood that it was to start off with. It's never the same once you've destroyed it. You can't ever go back and really make it right again. Or even let it get right on its own, because nature, there's a lot of things that nature cannot do to regenerate itself. We need to leave it alone and let it be healthy.
Several years ago, I lived in a country where nobody wanted to live. It was all grass swamp where the bull gators bellered and the cottonmouth crawled at the king. Once in a while, some folks passing by would stop at my place to visit. They would all set a spell, but the skeeters gave them hell. They could not tolerate it. And it was good to live away out here with the birds and the otters, bear and deer. All night I was doing mighty good. Drying coon skins and cleaning gator hides, I was doing pretty good selling it. Once in a while I would make my way to town to buy some coffee beans and bacon. Then I'd go down the road by the palmetto tree to do a little bit of bootlegging. And it was good to live away out here with the birds and bees, otters, bear and deer. Wouldn't you know, it didn't last long, this country life I was living. I saw a man by the old gopher hole with three other men surveying. It wasn't long before you could see a whole bunch of people in building. Well, up popped the bank by the old willow tree where the diamond back around was living. And there were birds and bees, otters, bears and deer. They was living here before y'all came here. And there were birds and bees, panthers, bear and deer. They was living here before y'all came here.
Thank you, my friend. When we were talking earlier in the program and we were talking about the Environmental Pollution Agency, the EPA, one of the aspects that I think is important to discuss, especially because this is an international audience, is that even if government agencies, and this is a big if, will, quote, clean up a contaminated site, and if you look at the history of the Superfund program, we know that that's a joke, but even if that is to be done, what the public really does not understand, no fault of their own because they're not told, is the years of toxic impact of sediments that continually release their poisons from the mud or the ooze, the organic matter that's under the water column. Would you talk about the long-range pollution issue of contaminated sediments?
You know, it's interesting what the EPA and DEP have decided to do now is let these mills build a pipe. If they build a pipe from the current discharge point up at the mill now, and one that effluent through the discharge pipe to the Gulf of Mexico, there will basically be no more Fin Holloway River because the mill has dried up the source of the river. They pump about 91, they have a permit for 91 million gallons a day, an amazing amount of water when you think about 91 million gallons of water that they are allowed to pump out of the ground. That's clean water now, from that's out way east of the mill. And then they dirty that and put it in the Fin Holloway River. Now, if they run that river through a pipe, then it's going to leave the sediments exposed to the air because the river on the north and east side of the mill, before it gets to the river, to the mill, is only about 4 or 5 feet wide generally now because they've dried up the headwaters to it with their ditching and draining.
Yes.
So when they dump their effluent into it, say 60 or 70 million gallons a day into the Fin Holloway now, if they run that much effluent through a pipe through Gulf of to the Gulf of Mexico, it's going to leave the river itself a little dry creek. It'll be about 4 or 5 feet wide. So it's going to expose the sediments to the air, and it's going to kill the birds, any kind of animals that live anywhere around the river there, the turtles. There are no frogs there now. They're all dead, but you won't find a frog there. The only fish that live in it now basically are mudfish, bowfin, and the little mosquito fish, and those are the ones that are changing sex, the little mosquito fish are. So, you know, if you think about not even having the river there, but just having the sediments there. Fact is that what happens when you have dioxin in the water, it goes to the sediments. It's afraid of water, and so it goes and settles in the sediments. That's right. It settles down into the sediments, and that's where it stays. The sludge from the settlement ponds at the mill, they have built these huge settlement ponds where they try to put air, oxygen, back into the what's supposedly called water.
So-called aeration.
Aeration, right. Water is H2O. This is two parts horrible and one part odor. There's no O in it. So what they try to do is they try to aerate it and put oxygen back in it, but there's no dissolved oxygen in this effluent in the river. Fish can't actually live in it because they have to have oxygen. The reason that mudfish, the bowfin, can live in it is because they're kind of a prehistoric fish, and they have lungs and gills. So when they come to the top and they do this roll, and anybody who lives in the Everglades has seen mudfish many times. They're very common in Florida, but they come to the top to get air, and they'll roll, and you can tell it's a mudfish when they do that. So they can live in this oxygen-depleted effluent. It's not water. It's not fair to call it water. So it's not H2O. It's two parts horrible and one part odor is what it is. When you have that kind of a situation, you can't possibly have healthy aquatic systems. The nutrients in the water are terrible because of the effluent from the mill. The nutrient balance is way off. It has a very high salt content because of in the mill itself when you use chlorine is actually made from salt. What you do is you jolt salt with electricity and it makes chlorine. And if you even make it a chlorine dioxide, it's still the same thing. It's very high salt content. So there's nothing really can live in that river anymore. So there's no frogs. There's
right, it becomes eutrophic.
That's exactly right. So that's going out into the Gulf of Mexico now. And they say that the color of the effluent is the reason that the seagrasses are dead. Well, I'm here to tell you that effluent acts just like a herbicide. If you put it on grass, it'll kill everything but a pine tree. It does not kill pine trees. So for years now, they've taken the sludge of the settlement ponds and spread it on the land, which is a very stupid idea because more dioxin settles in that sludge, in the organic matter that settles to the bottom, which is what they're trying to do, is to settle it out. But they take that sludge and they bag that now and sell it as compost, which is I am just totally outraged by this. The Department of Agriculture seems to not care. They seem to think it's fine. But if they did any testing at all on that, they would find that it's very, very high in dioxins and furans and God knows what other kind of bad chemicals. So if you see something like that, don't buy it. Do not use it as compost. You don't want that on your tomato plants or anywhere around your children in your yard or anywhere. That's just not a safe thing to do. So what they've done now is that they've just totally ignored what's smart. What's a smart thing to do is just out the window, and they don't pay any attention. The state agencies and the federal government are not looking after us.
Our guest today on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, is fellow Earth warrior Joy Ezell. The previous song you heard was from my Seminole friend, James Billy, singing about changes to Pahokee, his Everglades homeland, a special place I have the honor to now call home. Before we continue my conversation with Joy Ezell, I want to mention how much I appreciate her years of study and activism. Joy's commentary exemplifies her knowledge about land use issues, pollution from paper mills, and government environmental policy. It takes serious study and years of commitment to fight regulatory agencies and multinational corporations. If any of our listeners are interested to learn more about forest industries, there are a number of references I monitor to keep me posted. One is the Forest Industry Network. Their website, www.forestindustry.com, is a gateway to the North American forest industry. They list a variety of forestry and logging magazines. The Lockwood Post Directory of the world's major pulp and paper mills provides details about where most mills and paper company offices are located, and information about industry executives and profiles of industry paper mill equipment. Joy, my next question relates to how government agencies like the Environmental Pollution Agency, EPA, U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, National Institute of Health, Toxic Substance and Disease Registry, Department of Energy, and many others, both at the federal and state level, as well as other scientific entities, be they university or private sector research institutes, so-called manage or manipulate scientific studies in a way that can support a regulatory agency or a company's pre-planned desired outcome. I've attended many international and national conferences where so-called scientific data was presented in a way to favor a government policy or an industry objective. As a field biologist who majored in the forestry science of ecological impact assessment at university, I saw how research can be designed to either be purposely inconclusive or misleading to the general public. All one has to do is to look at where research funding for many environmental impact studies are coming from to see how many scientists are influenced to follow the corporate line. Scientists who may go against their funding source or government agency risk losing their careers. Joy, would you share any comments you have on this subject of corrupt science?
And the ATSDR, I call it the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, and that's actually what they call themselves, and I just put an emphasis on the for, because they do seem to be for toxic substances. When I was asking about, you know, what kind of cancer rate we might have in Taylor County, found out something really incredible. When people in our county get sick and have cancer and are going to die, they go to Tallahassee or down to Leon County or down to Alachua County in Gainesville in the hospital generally. Now we have hospice, which may be making a big difference in the cancer statistics. But when you die in Tallahassee in the hospital, your death is listed as a Leon County death, even though you might have lived in Taylor County your whole life. And what I learned was through all this is that people from Taylor County go to Tallahassee to die. People from over around Port St. Joe, where there was a huge bad paper mill, they go to Tallahassee to die. And the people from over in Madison County, just on the state line, there's a paper mill up at Clyteville, Georgia, right across the state line there, and they go to Tallahassee to die. So you got three paper mill communities contributing to the cancer rate in Leon County. And there was this huge article in the Tallahassee paper that said that Leon County had the highest cancer rate in the state. And I thought, well, yeah, I guess they do, because all the people from the paper mill communities go there to die. And I've tried for years to get the Bureau of Vital Statistics to change that, to put another little block on there, another little box that you could check to say, you know, this is the county where they lived, not where they died. And that way our cancer statistics would probably be a lot more correct. Through all this, I met a lady named Linda King, who wrote a book called Inconclusive by Design. And I had wanted to do some sort of an environmental health study there in Taylor County. And so I invited the ATSDR to come down, and it was coincidental that CNN was there filming a program at the same time, and they got to be on our TV program. The ATSDR was there for several days, and they sort of checked things out, and they met with us, and then they went out and met with the mill people, and they went to the health department. And about 2 days later, they issued a statement saying that there was absolutely nothing wrong with anybody in Taylor County. There was no problem. So that's the kind of health study they do. They did not do any kind of a comprehensive health study. After that, I wrote to them and told them to never come back to Taylor County and for them to never do what they would actually call a health study, because we didn't want to hear their results, because we know they would not be true. So for years now, a friend of mine in our group has been keeping a list of all the people who die with cancer, or all the people who have lupus, or all the people who have Lou Gehrig's disease, or all the birth defects that we hear about. She keeps lists of all this. And we think that our statistics are probably a lot better than any of the government statistics. It's interesting that it's hard to get hard health data from any of the government agencies. Our health department in our county seems to be afraid of the mill, and I'm sure they are. They've probably been threatened several times. The head of the water department is a former mill environmental maintenance man. So, you know, he's pretty much compromised. They managed to put people in key places to keep things out of the news and to keep things under control. And that's been going on for all these years now. And it happens in every community where there is a big polluter. And these big polluters don't go to where there are wealthy people. They go to places where the people are poor, where there's a large number of Native Americans, or where there's a large number of black people, or if there are just poor white people. But they go to where people cannot fight them. You don't ever hear about a big, bad polluter being sighted in a place where people have money. That just doesn't happen. And, you know, people are becoming more aware of this all the time. And it is environmental injustice. It happens everywhere that a big polluter goes in and builds a plant, builds a facility that's going to pollute the earth. And we all need to be aware of that. Thank God we do have the media. Thank goodness for the media. If we didn't have the media, we would be in really a lot worse shape than we are.
What's the matter with us? What's the matter with us?
We're so comfortable, cozy. What's the matter with us? We're so daydreaming, dozy.
Why are we polluting our children?
There's no future in that.
Why put food in our poison?
There's no future in that.
Why do away with our woodlands?
Nothing to be gained from that.
Why waste the best of our farmland?
Where's the logic in that?
What's the matter with us?
Oh, what's the matter with us? Why be warring each other?
There's so much music to know.
Why be fighting each other?
So much good food to enjoy.
Why so afraid of another?
So many countries to know.
Why so afraid of living when there's so much loving to do?
What's the matter with us?
I'm asking, do you know
what's the matter with us?
I'm telling you, homeboy, we can't give it up no way. Rapping,
the matter with us? Ooh, what's the matter with us?
The homeboy so much has gone to waste. Reeking of disposable bad situation.
What's the matter with us?
You know what I mean? It ain't the same. It's a different kind of thing.
What's the matter with us?
We lost our minds. Some are giving up on a man.
Ooh, what's the matter with us?
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitichi Native Center. Yat-Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat-Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat-Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat-Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat-Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat-Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat-Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat-Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat-Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat-Kitichi's Kinonwatakwisi Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat-Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat-Kitichi Native Center, write to Yat-Kitichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA.
Yakidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, kinowatakusin, to all of our relations.
And you heard, prior to our public service announcement, program identification was a fine song from environmental singer-songwriter Rafi entitled What's the Matter with Us, speaking about what's going on to our Mother Earth. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. Next week on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, we continue with part three of my conversation with environmental earth warrior activist Joy Ezell. And Joy represents the fine organization HOPE, Help Our Polluted Environment. If you want to find out more about the subjects we talked about in today's broadcast, you can check out their website, hopeforcleanwater@yahoogroups.com. Or you can also check out www.savetaylorcountyfloridaresidents.org. Both websites go into more details about the environmental and economic issues our friends there are dealing with in what's now called North Florida. We're going to conclude with a very fine woman's song from the Lakota. And this is Lakota singer-songwriter Sissy Goodhouse from her Makoshe Music CD, Lakota Woman's Songs, The Third Circle. And the particular song we're going to share is entitled Encouragement Song. I think it's very important that we all stay encouraged as Earth Warriors to help defend Mother Earth. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Aho, Kinoan One Tocracin, to all of our relations.
Iyo tie wakie fail. Yeah, walkie, yeah, I.